Welcome back to part two of that classic rock show where we're talking to author Harvey Kubernick about his new book about Jimi Hendrix, and the title is Voodoo Child. It's available on Amazon, everyone. Harvey, in your book, you talked about Jimmy's fascination with all things sci-fi, and you can hear this repeatedly in his music. And as Mark said earlier, he spent a very fun evening with actor Leonard Nimoy, who was Dr. Spock on Star Trek. So let's play a song that Jimmy's, I guess, otherworldly existence front and center from the 1967 album Axis Spolz's Love, and it's the song called Up From the Sky. I wanna do you no harm. I just wanna know about your different lives. I heard some of people fall. I heard some you got your families living in cages, dark and cold. Some just stay there and dust away past the age of old. Is this true? Please let me talk to you. I just wanna know about the rooms behind your minds. Do I see a vacuum there, or am I going blind? Or is it just a remains for vibrations echoes long ago? Things like love the world and let your fancy flow. Is this true? Please let me talk to you. Let me talk to you. I have lived here before, the days of ice. And of course this is why I'm so concerned. And I come back to find the stars displaced and the smell of a world that is burned. A smell of the world that is burned. Yeah, well, maybe maybe it's just a change of climate. I can take it, baby. I just want to see. So where do I purchase my ticket? I just like to have a ringside seat. I want to know about the new Mother Earth. I want to hear and see everything. I want to hear and see everything. I want to hear and see everything. That was Up From the Skies by Hendrix. Harvey, what'd you think of that song?
I love that song. There's kind of a Mose Allison type vocal thing that Jimmy does, and the drums by Mitch Mitchell, the brushes. It's a spoken word audio essay. But the other thing is, when Jimmy first arrived in England, he encounters the rock and roll character Kim Fowley, songwriter, record producer. They're in the same hotel in England, and in the lobby, it's in the book, Jimmy and Kim meet because they have friends in Seattle and Jimmy immediately is talking about science fiction to Kim, and even discusses a tune called like Martian Love Machine, and brings up the author Ray Bradbury to Kim. And then Kim, you know, 50 years later tells me the story that's in the book. So the preoccupation and the guiding work of science fiction, and that includes TV shows like The Twilight Zone. Mm-hmm. Jimmy was reading these books, these authors. And so you're going to get Up From the Skies, and you're going to get Electric Church references. You can kind of see it. That I don't know if that's blue, but blue sometimes goes into The Twilight Zone and outer space.
Well, more in your book, you remarked about people in faraway places wearing Jimi Hendrix T-shirts despite never having heard his music. And I thought about this a few weeks ago. My wife and I were staying at a Hilton Hotel in Vancouver, Canada, and here in this upscale of hotel of all places was hanging a large, beautifully framed poster of Jimi in concert. And they actually sent Jim this picture because I couldn't believe it. So here's my question. In your opinion, why does Hendrix have this transcendental appeal? Because he wasn't exactly middle America.
I actually think there's a direct link, a psychic debt, a connective tissue that I don't think people bring this up. Ray Manzarek and I have discussed this, that Jimmy had a thread to the Beat Generation movement, Go Cat Go movement, travel, non-materialism, hitchhiking, exploration, space dimension, no shackles, no restrictions, make love, freedom, all these things that I think come out of the 40s and 50s. And I'm not saying Jimmy, you know, knew about the Jack Kerouac records that were on, you know, that came out through Bob Thiel. I'm not saying that, but I think, and I have no proof of this, this is just feeling. And I think that, but as Eric said, if it wasn't for Jack Kerouac and On the Road, there'd be no Doors. But I think Jimmy's takeaway, whether he was active participant in this or it was just something the way David Bowie picked up on it, it was just, I want to be myself and do my thing. And I think he did his thing. And that means even wardrobe, visual, hair, the guitar work. And also, you know, he was very soft-spoken, according, I've interviewed his half-sister Janie a couple of times. I met Al Hendricks and his father, and he was off stage. He was kind of quiet, but on stage, he turns into Dick Butkus on stage, you know? And I think people, now he was also trapped by playing some of the same repertoire, the way the Beatles had to do those same 12 songs. He didn't really get a chance to really go deep catalog like the Pearl Jams and the People now get to really whip out some things from way back. But the freedom aspect, I feel that exists.
Well, I want to get back. You said he was sort of trapped in this repertoire. Was that Michael Jeffries doing?
It was partially management, but it was also in the world of his touring days, late 66 through 1970, your sets were 40 minutes, maybe an hour, maybe hour and 5 minutes. There was one, two, or sometimes three opening acts on the bill. So you didn't have that 90 minutes or 2 hours or 2.5 hours to really do a full body of work. And because in the early days, AM radio stations often were your co-sponsors of the shows or involved, you sort of had to play, you know, Purple Haze and some of those tunes because they were familiar to the audience. That's not saying he didn't slip in a few tunes that we hadn't heard very often, but he was mandated to do a lot of the stuff. And I think he felt trapped, including the antics on stage, mm-hmm. which he was veering away from.
Yeah, I'm going to ask you about that in a little while, the story about the Fillmore and Bill Graham. But Jim?
Well, I like to ask a question because, Harvey, you mentioned his family, Hendrix's family. How important was it for the Hendrix family to get control of Jimmy's image, music, and marketing?
Well, extremely important, and it took many, many years because people need to be very vigilant about their image and likeness. And I think 30, 40, and 50 years ago, people—well, 40 and 50 years ago—I don't think people knew about new media platforms, streaming, CDs. DVDs. Nobody knew the afterlife of the products, let alone would there be books on our family people. So it took a while and people like Carlos Santana were very active in helping Janie Hendrix and the family and the father, Al, secure all the rights and control the assets right now. So that took a while. But okay. If you study rock and roll, and you guys know history of rock and roll, often the first deals you get are not very favorable to the artists. Or in my case, some of the deals you get early on for first and second time publishers, often without literary agents. Thank you, guys.
We know that.
Are often a little thin. But that's the thing about Jimi Hendrix. He didn't care about money. He just wanted to play. Even Chas Chandler has said, when he went to the loo, which is English for bathroom, he'd bring the guitar to the bathroom with him. He just wanted to play.
He did take, that was his security blanket. He did take his guitar everywhere. So let's listen to another cut from my second favorite Hendrix album, Cry of Love. It was released about 6 months after Jimmy's death. And there are a number of standout cuts on this album to give listeners an idea of where Jimmy was headed musically. For example, he put his deft touch on songs like Angel, but then he displays his mastery of the wah-wah pedal on other songs like Straight Ahead. So from the Cry of Love, here is Straight Ahead. And if you put on some headphones, you'll get the full effect of Jimmy's guitar panning from left and right, right to left, and so forth.
Another great song. Good pick, Mark. That was your pick. Harvey, if Jimmy was still with us, he'd be 79 years old. I think everyone wonders what Jimmy would be like today. So do you think he would have wound up like Snoop Dogg, who was once an outlaw rapper, now became a mainstream cash cow commodity?
I talked this over with Bobby Womack, who did a collaboration with Nas. And I said, do you think Jimmy would be sampled? And Bobby said, depends who has the paperwork. But other than that, I know what Jimi Hendrix means to the hip hop and rap community, because I've met KRS-One, and I've interviewed Ice-T, and I've interviewed Ice Cube three times. He was in their record collection or their parents' record collection. Maybe he was their introduction to rock and roll or FM radio and stuff like that. I think Jimmy, I don't think he had a hardcore business sense about him. I don't think he'd be a label owner. I don't think he'd be a music publisher. I think he probably would have become more of a record producer the way he worked with Cat Mother, or he worked with a group called The Cake. I think he would have been a record producer and played on the records with the people. But then again, he wasn't the kind of guy to get up at 5 a.m. and make phone calls across the world and deal with sync rights and licensing. It just wasn't in his DNA. And, I was thinking, my brother and I, well, it's in the book too. I think he would have gone, he was going to make a record with Gil Evans, who worked with Miles Davis. And we were all hoping, I mean, now I can say it, I didn't know too much about that.
But you mean the jazz pianist, right?
Excuse me?
Gil Evans.
Gil Evans was an arranger.
Oh, okay.
Gil Evans was the piano player.
Right, right, okay.
But I think there were so many jazz cats that would have wanted to start playing with him, whether it had been a Larry Coryell. And I could see him going that way because it was guitar-centric, but also freedom. But would he have done fusion music? This is the expedition that we never really have the ending on. But he wasn't built to be a businessman. And I don't know. And I think he was tired of touring at the time because his tours were so haphazard and so not booked very well. But things are easier now for people 78, 79, and 80 still touring, from jet flights to hotel rooms to the amount of money on the table. But I think he would have been a studio character. Then again, he had Electric Lady Studio, and we don't know where that would have gone.
True.
As him as a studio owner, too.
True. Well, music impresario Bill Graham is one of my heroes. You know, his journey from child Holocaust survivor to becoming one of America's leading rock music promoters is pretty remarkable. And I attended an exhibit of Bill Graham a few years ago at the Illinois Holocaust Museum, and I asked his children about a story in your book, but at that time I had read it elsewhere about Graham lecturing Hendrix on a subpar set at the Fillmore East. So my question is, did you ever interview Bill Graham? And if well, what were his feelings about Jimmy that the rest of us might not know?
I met Phil Graham three times and interviewed him for 2 hours at his house in Mill Valley in 1976 for Melody Maker, the day I also interviewed Carlos Santana and Jerry Garcia. And I loved the Bill Graham book that Robert Greenfield wrote. And I did see the Skirball exhibit in Los Angeles of the Bill Graham life. I did ask Bill about his favorite shows. They're like my children. I can't pick one. And, you know, it turns into a whole spiel. Okay, he did say the greatest performer he ever saw was Otis Redding. And he said it was like a panther on stage. And he really gave props to Otis, just the physicality of Otis. And told me a story he said, Otis, do you need anything? I just like some ice and some ice water. And Bill had to run down the block to go get some ice because the ice machine didn't work, or the water with the apples, it wasn't available. Ben and I said, well, listen, You know, I know that you presented Bill Jimi Hendrix a few times, and he told me two stories. The one's in the book about he told Jimmy, "Listen, would you stop all this stage antic stuff? Just play music one time without. I don't want to see any kind of guitar fuel. I don't want to see. I want to hear you play guitar." And then he does a set which is sort of subdued, and Bill's happy. And then he comes out for an encore, does another set, and pulls out all the stops. But the other story Jim told me is that one time Jimmy was late for a show at the Fillmore West, I think. I don't think it was in New York, it's in San Francisco. And he's late. And Bill does not like lateness. Bill was meticulous because he had an obligation to the audience because there's other acts on the bill. And he really gave it to Jimmy, who arrived in a cab or something. I mean, he arrived just before showtime. He wasn't delinquent as far as going on stage, but he cut it close. "Jimmy, how could you do this to me? You've got these avid fans. The press is here for the San Francisco Chronicle." And Jimmy said, "Bill, there was a really good movie playing at the motel."
Well, speaking of a live version, everyone's played Chuck Berry's "Johnny Be Good," but I guarantee you've never heard it played like this. So, from the 1972 album "Hendrix in the West" is a live version of "Johnny Be Good." Well, we'd love to thank our guest, Harvey Kubernick, who wrote the book Voodoo Child by all about Jimi Hendrix. And I recommend everyone getting this book because it's just outstanding and it's available on Amazon. Harvey, I hope you had a good time.
I had a fantastic time. You know, I appreciate the platform, and it was especially gratifying actually talking to people who really have a deep understanding of Jimi's legacy. but also, you know, have met people like Kim Simmons and Savoy Brown. So the connective tissue, I think, links us all together.
Well, this is a great book for the upcoming holiday season. Everyone, please join us on the air every Monday from 6:30 to 7:30 p.m. and on Fridays from 11 a.m. to noon on Huntley Community Radio 101.5 FM. You can also listen to our archive shows anytime by going to the station's website and clicking on the program links.
Well, let's close out with Fire from Woodstock, all right?
Yeah,
all right.
That sounds good.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
All right, baby, listen here now for the last time. You don't care for me. I don't care about that. You got a new fool. I'm not just like that. I've only one itch and desire. Let me stand next to you. Listen here, baby. Step back and so damn crazy. Hey, your mama ain't home and ain't Robinson. You play with me and you won't get burned. I've only one itch in his eye. Let me stand next to you. Oh, let me stand. I ain't gonna give you too much time. Jimmy, take off. Yeah, you know what I'm talking about, man.